Welcome. Hope everybody had a wonderful weekend. Welcome to Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. My name is Chip DeBlock, and I'm your host here. And we're a group of law enforcement professionals that talk about today's news and issues, but we do it from a law enforcement perspective. And let me introduce the crew. Guys, if you don't mind waiting for the video portion of our show, he's back. Dr. Travis Yates, travisyates.org, if you want more information about this guy. Traveling the country, and amazingly, in the news, we have a story that Travis can supply a lot of information on. So welcome to the show, Doctor. Also, we have retired LAPD Commander Lieutenant Jeff Weninger. He is also the author of the book that's getting ready to get released, On Thin Ice. You can get more information about that. Sign up for that book, guys, at jeffweninger.com. If you're watching the stream, the URL is on the screen. That's his name. So just his name, .com, jeffweninger.com. Some great stuff. Gentlemen, a shout out to our sponsors. We have our title sponsor, Gulls at Gulls.com. Compliant Technologies, our satellite sponsor. Thanks to them, we're on satellite radio right now. Gunlearner.com, BlueTheGold.com, MyMedicare.life, and Safeguard Recruiting, our streaming sponsor. Thanks to them, we're reaching 1.5 million people right now on stream. Also, Two Bells, they built their new online store at LeoRoundtable.com. Prices are dirt cheap, and when I say that, I mean it. I pay what you guys pay. We don't make a dime off of anything on that store. Two Bells did a fantastic job. We've got all kinds of cool gear. If you're looking for something and you don't see it, get a hold of me or Tracy at Two Bells, and we'll get it up there for you. Also, a shout out to Brian Burns at the Tampa Free Press at tampafp.com, Ray Dietrich, formerlawman.com, and also lawofficer.com. Thanks to all these entities for helping make this show happen. Now, what in the world are we going to be talking about today? Guys, we got some great topics, so listen to this. DOJ deception with a question mark at the end. Report claims that feds fabricated, that's a strong word, 97% of Phoenix police civil rights violation findings. Are you freaking serious? And yeah, we're talking about consent decrees. So wait till you guys hear about that. Also, exclusive, Belmont officer is charged with rape. He had a 2017 domestic violence arrest. Oh, and by the way, he had a U.S. work permit because he's not a citizen either. You can thank Gavin Newsom for that. Then we got Vancouver police officers. They stop a suspect from stabbing his dog during an arrest. We've got our first video that we're actually going to cover. Don't think I forgot, Jeff. We got Fort Wayne Police Department releases body cam of a deadly shooting of a man during a home break-in. This is an in-progress burglary. And when the cop gets there, forced entry, blood everywhere, and he's attacking the female owner in the home. Wow. Then we got San Francisco Police Chief Bill Scott. He has been tapped as the head of the LA Metro Police Force. I'm hoping that Jeff has some inside scoop on that guy for us. We've also got a man shot and killed by the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office after attacking his girlfriend and then charging a police car. He basically attacked the police car. It's pretty crazy video. Then we got Johnson police officer shoots a suspect who hit an officer with their car while trying to flee. That's a pretty brutal hit. I would go. I hope that officer's okay. So if you guys are ready, let's go ahead and jump into the main story. They have a tendency to be a little bit deeper. It's carried by the Tampa Free Press, which is at tampafp.com. DOJ, of course, Department of Justice, deception with a question mark. Report claims that the feds fabricated 97% of the Phoenix Police Department civil rights violation findings. So I'm going to go ahead and read from the article, and then we'll have commentary on it. So a firestorm of controversy is erupting after retired police commander and author Travis Yates. And yes, you're looking at him right now on our show. So author Travis Yates, he published findings from his independent review of the Department of Justice's investigation to the Phoenix Police Department. Now, some of us have already aware of some of the stuff. I think the article is very well written. It's got a lot of really good information in it. So Dr. Yates, writing on the Substack, Courageous Police Leadership, he alleges that a staggering 97% rate of false reporting in the DOJ summary report, which claimed to have identified a pattern of practice of civil rights violations. Now, guys, remember, they use this information in these stats to justify the takeover, right? The consent decree. The DOJ investigation, spanning 6 years and over 5 million calls for service, it culminated in a report detailing 134 incidents that the federal agency asserted as evidence of systemic misconduct. That's a pretty powerful statement. So they say there's systemic misconduct. However, according to Dr. Yates' analysis, based on the Phoenix Police Department's public release of body camera footage and reports from each of these incidents, the vast majority of the DOJ's claims were either factually or contextually inaccurate. And here's a quote saying that from the first incident on, it was apparent that the DOJ never intended for a court or anyone to actually see these incidents. And this is what Dr. Yates wrote. He said he contends that the DOJ's mythology relies on anecdotal narratives, hindsight bias, advocacy framing, rather than factual accuracy. That's just a nice way of using another word, right? Instead of using the word, that investigators demonstrated a lack of expertise in police operations policy and relevant case laws such as Graham versus Connor. And guys, it gets better. Yates highlights instances where the lawful use of force was allegedly misidentified as unconstitutional and critical contexts, such as suspect behavior or prior warnings, which they actually admit, you know, they admitted that information from the DOJ's descriptions, never included it, which would have helped justify what happened. Yates argues that even if all 134 incidents were legitimate violations, which he strongly disputes, they would represent a minuscule fraction, and the number is just so low, it's ridiculous. I mean, far lower than 1% of a total police public interactions during the investigative period, hardly indicative of a systemic pattern or practice. Now, the Phoenix Law Enforcement Association, they reportedly contacted Dr. Yates about 18 months ago, expressed concerns about the impending DOJ investigation and the potential for federal oversight. Now, they cited the destructive aftermath they witnessed in other cities, and this is other cities that have had consent decrees where the DOJ's taken over. It's been a disaster, right? Everything that was supposed to do, the opposite happened. Crime went up, safety, you know, went down. Unlike many other law enforcement agencies that agreed to consent decrees based on DOJ summary reports alone, the Phoenix Law Enforcement Association and the Phoenix Police Department, they took steps towards transparency. And you could argue that they were bucking the system a little bit, you know, fighting the DOJ takeover. Despite facing pressure from city leaders and a barrage of supportive media coverage from for the DOJ investigation, the Phoenix Police Department released a public website. And this is pretty good, containing details, body cam footage, reports of all the 134 incidents that were cited by the DOJ, the same ones that the DOJ used for justification to take over the agency. This move allowed the public to review the same information that the DOJ was using to make it the allegations. And Yates spent months reviewing the materials, leading to the explosive conclusion of widespread false reporting by the DOJ. Now, he suggested the DOJ's primary goal has been to secure agency agreement to federal oversight, avoiding the need to prove claims in court, circumventing potential 10th Amendment challenges, yada, yada. And, you know, I'm going to kind of slow it down here, Dr. Yates, because I know we got 4.5 minutes left. But, man, we're off to a fantastic start. And I'd love to hear more. And now people know we're talking about federal consent decrees. And I do have a question for you, though, because we're talking about mostly this all started with the Biden DOJ, unless I'm mistaken. Correct me if I'm wrong. So I am kind of curious if anything has changed with the new Trump DOJ. We're talking about, you know, a federal agency. But have you seen any changes, or is that remained to be seen yet? But go ahead, Dr. Yates.
Well, let me ask that question first. This has been going on since 1994. The 94 crime bill made this possible, where the federal government, the DOJ, can go in and investigate and take over local police departments. Like I said in the report that was covered in that article, they can't do that by the 10th Amendment. It's called states' rights. So that's why they have to write a report that is so damning and so scathing, as the media likes to declare it, that it almost pressures the department to just agree, because you can agree to give up your constitutional rights. And in 30 years, they have destroyed city after city. Now, what has typically happened is under a Republican administration, they slow that down. Trump has actually stopped it in the last two administrations. But because it's codified in law, it comes right back with every Democratic administration. And what no one wants to tell you is the DOJ could play a role in patterns and practice in law enforcement. They could actually investigate the 70 plus federal law enforcement agencies, but at the time they can't, Chip, because they are immune from 1983 lawsuits. Imagine that, in their own backyard. So the DOJ claimed in the report that the Phoenix Police Department is incapable of policing themselves. And my question would be, who is going to be policing the DOJ? So I will say this, I find no pleasure in what I found here. The idea that one of the most powerful entities in our land misrepresented 97% of what they said. And by the way, that's pretty generous. I actually had to kind of give them some sort of innuendos to even make the 3% valid. So it's very generous. It's so shocking. I think people would probably question me. I almost wish it wasn't 97%. I mean, it's insane. Now, here's the question, and obviously there's a lot to cover, is did that start in Phoenix, as you alluded? No. You don't start lying 97% of the time at once. So if you backtrack this, to all the departments they have ruined and all the communities where safety has waned. And by the way, Roland Fryer did a peer-reviewed study that said there have been more homicides because of this. Okay, so this is not me saying it. Where have they done this elsewhere? We alluded in my report some anecdotal evidence. The Louisville chief said this wasn't true. Some other people did, but up until now, we never got to see behind the curtain. And when we saw behind the curtain for the first time in 30 years, what we saw was, I can't even, it's corrupt at the highest level. And I'll tell you right now, I'm not going to stop until this ends. This is horrendous what happened. The Phoenix Police Department spent $10 million to do this, to partner with the DOJ to do this. And I'm sure they expected to get a fair, impartial report about their agency. And what they got was anything but that. I mean, it's really insane. If anybody wants to really dive deep into this, go to travisyates.org, go to articles. I know I'm asking a lot here, but the first article that comes up is the article I wrote. That was what Tampa built their article on. In that article, I link up the full report. And I'm telling you right now, when you start reading side by side what they said and what actually happened, this is nothing short of intentional. It's an intentional act by the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division. And so obviously there's a lot to cover here, a lot to talk about. That's what I'll say for now, but it was pretty insane to find what I found. By the way, I've sort of found it from the first incident on. I got through the first 30 something incidents. It was 100%. And I thought, oh my, this is what is going to happen here. And of course it took me 2 or 3 months to finish it. And so there it is.
Wow. Wow. We're off to a great start, guys. And hey, don't go anywhere. It's about to get real, very real. We'll be right back. Our first commercial break. All right, guys, you know, it's time to talk about our title sponsor at Gauls at Gauls.com. And, you know, as police officers, we all know that we can get our gear from a lot of different places. And when we're talking about online, wow, that even opens up the choices, right? But I want to remind you guys about the importance of supporting companies that actually support law enforcement. And I don't know of a company that fits that bill better than Gauls at Gauls.com. And they do it in spectacular fashion. Now, their motto is also proud to serve those who serve, which, of course, they do. So, they not only do that, they walk the talk by supporting dozens of focused organizations, including this radio show. And what I want you guys to do is when you're looking for gear, support a title sponsor at Gauls.com, and they're going to do something for you. For our loyal listeners of this show, they're giving you a code to use where you get 15% off your next purchase. It's called Radio 15, so Radio 15 for 15% off your next purchase. That is good till June the 31st at Gauls.com. And they have gift cards for your family, friends, and loved ones. Gauls.com, guys, go there today. Welcome back to Leo Roundtable at leoroundtable.com. And hey, we left off talking about, you got it, DOJ consent decrees, and an agency that actually decided to, you know what, we're going to go ahead and review the justification that the DOJ is using to support taking over our agency. And and they hired Dr. Travis Yates to do that. And boy, what did he, and boy, what he found. So, so Travis, let's go ahead and go a little bit further down the rabbit hole here before we move to our next topic. But, and Jeff, if you have any questions, Lieutenant, feel free to pipe in, because I know that you took over the Rampart Division, LAPD, right around the time they uncovered a bunch of stuff going on over there. I know you may have a little bit different. I know that you and I've spoken before, and you actually felt that there was a need for what the federal government did, I believe, with LA back when that stuff happened. So it's open for a good conversation.
Well, I would say this. I don't think anyone doesn't want accountability in law enforcement, right? And when the DOJ began this 30 years ago, I have no doubt they had good intentions, probably different personnel, right? But the mechanism in place today as it stands is completely broken. So there has to be a different mechanism. Because we need a mechanism to investigate agencies if we believe they're violating people's rights, but that mechanism cannot be the Civil Rights Division of the DOJ. Not after what we found, that all credibility is gone.
97%. Oh,
not 50, not yeah. A few. I mean, and let me just explain to the audience. I mean, I would love for them to dive deep and read the whole thing, because it really is alarming. But here's how they did it. I'll give you an example. This is essentially what they did throughout. Now, they flat out lied in some cases, but this is typically how they doubt. They eliminated totality of circumstances in every incident. I'll give you an example. Two quick examples. First example, the Phoenix police ran across a man that was having a mental breakdown, and instead of helping him, they tased him. unconstitutional use of force. And then next, it was, they go on to the next thing. But when you watch the video and you read the reports, you find out, well, yeah, he was having a mental breakdown, but he'd also just kidnapped a lady. He also had a knife. He was also threatening off. I mean, so this is kind of how they did it every single time. And of course, there were a few instances where they just completely fabricated. I'll give you a quick example. They had a whole section there about how the homeless people are having their rights violated. And I think they only listed, I think it was less than 10 examples of this out of the hundreds of thousands of obviously encounters. But here's how they couched all of it. The city ordinance for the city of Phoenix is unconstitutional. So these 10 contacts or whatever number it was, were all unconstitutional. Well, guess what? The DOJ doesn't get to rule on what the constitutionality of laws are. You know who does that, Chip? I know it's going to shock you. That's right. It's the courts. And the courts, all the way to the Supreme Court, have said that municipalities can make laws even if they disproportionately affect homeless people because of the quality of life issues. That case came down about a year ago. And that case was already ruled at the appellate level before that. The DOJ knew this, but they put in the report, this law is unconstitutional, so all this activity is unconstitutional. Now, if that's not intent, I don't know what is.
Good point. Dr. Jeff, I just promoted you. Jeff, did you have any commentary? We got a little over three minutes.
No, I think you kind of hit on it. You know, my experience was with the LAPD, and we were on the front end of this. I mean, this is a number of years ago. And like Travis said, you know, different people, a different DOJ. You know, obviously, I can't make any comment on this. I haven't seen all of the data and the reports and to the extent that Travis has. But, I mean, it is actually troubling. I guess my question is, you know, where do they go from here? Is the police department going to... Now, armed with your analysis, going to be able to use that as fodder to fight their position, or what's the next step?
The Trump administration has ceased the investigation into Phoenix, although the damage is done. The assistant attorney general did a national press conference and made the report to seem like fact across the world. And that's kind of what these reports do. They defame these agencies, and the damage is done and the money spent. But I want to kind of clarify one thing Chip said. The police department did not hire me. In fact, to this date, the administration, the leadership, the police department really haven't said anything. And they knew about this long before I did, right? When that report dropped, I'm sure they looked at it and said, well, this doesn't seem right. They've yet to say anything. Now, the question is going to be, once it's pretty clear what happened, what will the city do? I know what they should do, but I don't know what they will do. And I'm willing to give them time to say that. What they ought to do is they ought to file a lawsuit against the DOJ to get their $10 million back. That's what they ought to do, because this was fraud in of itself with the kind of money and partnership. Phoenix participated at a level. They hired many people to help them full time, spent over $10 million. And then when the DOJ came back and said, and this is in my report, they came back and said, hey, we found something really bad. We need you to enter a consent decree so we can run your department. The city council, who makes the decisions there in the city, said, so they said something outrageous. They said, okay, may we see your investigation? And they said, no, we don't do that. Like, well, you want us to sign this contract to take over our department. Why won't you show us the results of your investigation? Because we won't. Well, why do you think they wouldn't want to show them that?
I can give you 97%
reason. Because it's what I found, right? And so they didn't show it to them. When the Phoenix would not sign it, they wouldn't sign a contract without seeing the context of the contract. That's when the DOJ released this to the world. And what was that? That is done to pressure the agency to quickly come back to the table and sign off on it, which is what has happened in virtually every agency in three decades. And somehow, some way, with the press, and in my report, I have all the screenshots of what the press was saying about Phoenix Police Department based on this report. It's a propaganda piece is what it was. And, of course, the press didn't look into this. They had the same access I had. In fact, all the press has done in Phoenix is talk bad about me. You know, I'm somehow a controversial figure that's looking into this, but they're not looking into it, right? Because that's all you can do if you can't argue the facts or the data that I talked about. And they'll continue to do that. They'll continue to call me names because that's all they have. By the way, this is the press. This isn't individuals or citizens. And so the press is just as complicit. They're in on it as well. And that's what this report is designed to do, to pressure these agencies to just sign off on this. And they just got caught because they didn't think that anyone would actually look at this.
Wow. So again, where can people go to get more information, Dr. Travis?
I would love them to go to travisyates.org, hit the article section, and the first article is where all this information is.
Love it. All right, guys, there you go. That is your mission for the day. Commercial break. We'll be right back. All right, guys, we're going to be talking about Compliant Technologies at ComplianTechnologies.com. They're committed to providing non-lethal solutions to help officers gain the upper hand safely and rapidly in a humane, low optics manner, utilizing their CD3 conductive distraction and de-escalation technology. Now, their flagship product, we all know by now, it's the glove. It's helped officers tens of thousands of times with no injuries. And yes, you heard that correctly. I said no injuries. The glove has actually achieved non-lethal status in an arena that predominantly can only offer less lethal results. And when it comes to weapons retention, transitioning to a sidearm or conducted energy weapon, the glove at ComplianTechnologies.com, it virtually eliminates weapons confusion. So you can stay ahead of the game with Compliant Technologies and the revolutionary CD3 that hundreds of agencies have already turned to nationwide. And friends, take it from me, when it comes to safety, this is one of the most hands-on common sense solutions that's ever come along. I encourage you to go to ComplianTechnologies.com today and tell them that Chip sent you, and they have some really cool videos on the website as well, ComplianTechnologies.com. Now it's time to talk about Blue the Gold at BlueTheGold.com. And if you're struggling with the ins and outs of warrantless searches and seizures, or if you're worried about the liability in case you get it wrong, say hello to BlueTheGold.com. They translate search and seizure documents into clear, straightforward concepts that any officer can relate to, plus they give the training for free thanks to BlueTheGold.com's free weekly webinars. Now, coming up this week, Plainview and Plainfield, May the 21st. Sign up at BlueTheGold.com today and join thousands of your peers in blue and step up your legal game, because frankly, you and your agency cannot afford not to. BlueTheGold.com. Welcome back to Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com. We just wrapped up talking about, an article that Tampa Free Press, TampaFP.com, about the DOJ, some inaccurate stuff, 97% of a report they submitted justifying the takeover of the Phoenix Police Department. And of course, Phoenix grew a backbone in their buck in the system and not letting the feds get away with it. More information about this, Dr. Travis Yates' website, travisyates.org. And also, underneath the story, it'll appear on our Rumble channel tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. We'll have a link to the story at the Tampa Free Press article as well. So guys, please make sure that you check that out. But excellent information, Dr. Travis. That is just, and you're right. It's so bad, you don't even want to believe that it's true. But I know that it is, and you've got the reputation, that's above reproach. So I love it, guys. Moving along, I promised Jeff Winninger that we'd start off with video number two, because apparently he doesn't really like dogs that much. So we've got it. We may be able to get to the dog art. Oh, I know. Every woman in America now you've got a black eye on you now from that. Rumble.com. This is Butter. This is our favorite law enforcement video channel. And look, if we're talking about a story with a video component for people that are listening to the show audibly, podcast, radio station, stay loyal to the outlets bringing you this good quality content, because in return for that, we'll describe in great detail what's going on so that you don't feel like you're missing out on anything. But if you have to see a video that we talk about, all you have to do is go to our Rumble channel the next day, 9 o'clock in the morning. A special version of this live show is reproduced at 9 o'clock on a Rumble channel called Leo Roundtable. In that version, producer Will, he inputs every video that we talk about. As we talk about it, pictures of the good guys and the bad guys pop up as we're talking and telling the story. It's a great way to watch the show. We do that Tuesday through Saturday. So on this one, Fort Wayne Police Department releases body cam of a deadly shooting of a man during a home break-in.
Blood on the ground.
Guys, this is like in progress. Fort Wayne Police Department, they released this body cam footage of deadly police shooting of a 58-year-old bad guy during a home break-in that happened back in September. So our 58-year-old bad guy's name is John McLeod. He was shot and killed by Officer Julian Mester after police were called to a home break-in. It's 2 o'clock in the morning, September the 6th of 2024. So roughly 6 months ago, in an edited video released by the agency, a 911 caller could be heard telling dispatchers that a guy is breaking into a home, saying that he just busted in the door. The woman said that he's tripping, he's screaming for help before entering the home by breaking through the glass in the front door. Now, the woman who lived in the home also called 911 saying that she heard someone break in and that they were, so that was a woman. I guess you got a couple people that called in, and the woman said that they were on the other side of the door. And then we've got the video of the cop showing up. And but during the 911 call, they could hear the guy in the background, the woman screaming, saying he's coming into her bedroom. So she kind of barricades herself in the bedroom. So the officer arrives. He's got a body cam. He gets out of the squad car, pulls his gun out. And he walked through the front steps. It's a glass door. Glass is smashed in. Blood everywhere. He verbalizes that on radio. And then he hears the female screaming upstairs. He goes in, and all he's really got to do is follow where the screams are coming from up the stairs, or just follow the blood trail, because that's where he goes. I mean, there's literally blood everywhere while he's, you know, walking up the stairs to the bedroom. And so when he gets to the top of the stairs, the woman had barricaded herself in her bedroom. Bad guys already breached that door, and the door ends up being cracked open. Our officer can see through the crack, and it's a decent sized crack, so we can see the bad guy in there. Can't exactly tell what he's doing, but according to the report, he was actually batterizing the female victim after he broke in. Our cop shoots four times. Now the homeowner, and as soon as he shoots, by the way, the woman said, "Oh, thank you so much." She's like so relieved that the cop saved her. Now the homeowner said that McLeod, our bad guy, started physically assaulting her just before the officers arrived. And of course, I said that you could see the guy in the doorway. I couldn't really tell from the body cam, at least, you know, what was going on. Now, what's interesting to notice that the family, surviving family members, they're not happy. They're saying the entire time you can hear John, who's our bad guy, McLeod, on the ground, breathing, gasping. You know he's still alive. This is what the family attorney is saying, Harvey Lancaster. And they're not doing any life-saving measures. It's like they're just standing there essentially letting him die, is what the attorney's saying. The body cam footage is the final voice from my father, John Jr., says. And I don't know why they're trying to do this emotional attachment to a bad guy that breaks in. He's all over this woman. He's bleeding. And I know there's information we don't know, but we know this lady was in fear of her life. And he says, if the world can see that, they'll get clear view of what actually happened. Like, they're taking up for this bad guy that did all this stuff. The family says that they're planning on pursuing legal action against the department. Now, it says in the article that the woman who owned the home, who was inside and barricaded, said that she did not believe McLeod broke into her home with any intent to harm her. But then again, she's calling, screaming on, you know, on the 911 call, and then she's thanking the cop after, you know, she's screaming when the cop's there, leading the cop upstairs, and then thanking the cop for shooting the guy. And she said that she heard the sound of breaking glass, later found McLeod had thrown himself through a glass door, called 911. She said that he roamed through the home, and it was in the process of being renovated, and that explains what you're going to see in the body cam, because you're looking at, it doesn't look like a normal home. It's under some severe renovation. And she said that he goes upstairs where she had barricaded herself into the room. She said McLeod tried to get into her bedroom twice, eventually kicked through the wooden door, went to her room, and began to physically assault her. And she said that police arrived right as the altercation was taking place. So that's what we have. I'm curious what the commentary is going to be. We got about a little over five minutes before we take our next commercial break. Lieutenant Jeff Wininger.
Well, I think initially that they're taking her comment out of context when she said that she didn't feel that he entered her residence with the intent of causing her harm. I think she's meaning that he didn't go directly to her to try to cause her harm. She was in the bedroom for a while, and I got to actually commend her. Listening to that 911 call, she remained pretty calm for having somebody in her house that she has no idea who they are or why they're there. So I commend her for that. But you know, the one thing I did notice is that I was listening to the radio broadcast traffic, and I was surprised that I didn't hear backup units broadcasting, you know, show me rolling code 3 from a particular location. So, because this, you don't get these all the time, you know, where you're talking, this is a home invasion robbery or a hot prowl where it's being reported through communications divisions that you have somebody inside the residence and someone has broken in. I got to commend this officer. Officer shows up by himself, and Chip, I mean, you didn't do it justice to describing the actual scene. I mean, it looked like there was some type of satanic, you know, type of, you know, event that occurred. There was blood everywhere. And, you know, this officer just didn't hesitate. And he responded to what his senses were telling him relative to what he was hearing and what he was seeing. And he went up those stairs without fear to confront what was going on. And for all intents and purposes, he likely saved this woman's life, or at least saved her from serious injury. So I did, as far as a lawsuit, good luck with that.
you know, the report said officers, you know, plural, but I saw no indication of the second officer, you know, so
I didn't either.
Yeah,
there's no second body worn, and there was no, I didn't hear any other officer. I didn't hear another police vehicle arriving code 3 or anything like that. So, yeah. It was an outstanding job, I think, by communications, by the actual victim, as well as the officer that responded. And I think it's this goes a little bit above and beyond. I mean, he definitely, this is what we train our officers to do, to perform. I always say that we don't get paid for what we do on a daily basis. We get paid for what we, God forbid, have to do. Yeah. And he was prepared, and he earned his paycheck. Yeah. So he should be commended for that.
So Travis, did you see how our officer made it in through the doorway? I know he was, you know, the broken glass is everywhere. And I could see him, at least it seemed to me, he was calculating, should I go through the, or, you know, the door is closed. But I was pretty impressed to see him kick in the wooden frame door. I think it was one kick and he got the thing open. So.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we've got plenty of bad things to say about how police use video and how attorneys use video. But when you watch this video, you are given just a real time POV look into what this profession does on a daily basis. I mean, what an incredible calm approach, meticulous, communicated to dispatch. And like Jeff said, it looked like a horror movie when you look through that window. I mean, it's like a movie. A movie couldn't do it justice, right? And he just calmly walks up those stairs, identifies the target. There was no, what we see so often, right, which is taser, 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 get off that poor woman or I'm going to tase you. You know, I mean, we see those videos all the time. No, it was decisive. It was quick. It was imminent. And it kind of was one of those videos that makes you want to put on the body armor and head out somewhere, right? That'd be called vigilante where I'm at, but I won't do that. But man, oh man, it's an incredible video, an incredible view of what's going on. And to back up the video and the pending lawsuit, if you want to say that, imagine if there was no video. Oh, there'd be questions. This poor man was having, if the DOJ was investigating, he'd be saying, he's just having a mental episode. What are you doing here? I mean, so it's just so impressive what we're seeing. And I think training has, you see these from time to time, and I have to believe the training is just absolutely impeccable at that agency, because you don't treat that incident as calmly as we saw without a high level of training.
Yeah, you know, I agree. And I like to know what kind of body cam they had, because you both are right. The quality of the video, it was really superb. I mean, it was like TV quality stuff, although you really couldn't hear it on a lot of TV stations, you know, but wow, it was pretty gruesome. So, well, guys, we're coming up on our third commercial break, and hey, we're still looking for people to enter that Two Bells contest, the number 2 and the letter B. Type that in on the stream if you guys are interested in getting that $20 off the purchase on our online store. And that coolie, we'll see you guys back in 1 second. Commercial break. All right, guys, we're talking about GunLearn and GunLearn.com. You know, as law enforcement officers, we deal with guns every day, but it's what we don't know about them that gets us in the trouble. Injuries, civil lawsuits, accidental discharges, misidentifications, lost prosecutions, and also disciplinary issues. But GunLearn.com, they have your back. You can quickly become extremely firearm knowledgeable by simply learning 14 training modules from the convenience of your home or your office, or by attending a live seminar at GunLearn.com. You can also become a safe, accurate, and competent certified firearm specialist like our very own Captain Brett Bartlett and also attorney Ken Affianco. Now, the course has had huge success in raising the bar of firearm knowledge, and GunLearn has been a trusted source since 2011 by gun manufacturers, federal agencies, forensic organizations, and police departments nationwide. Now, if you're watching the show and you have your own agency, your chief or a sheriff, they've got a great deal for you. The founder, Dan O'Kelly, has got an arrangement where you can actually host a seminar for absolutely no cost. Go to GunLearn.com to get more information, GunLearn.com. Welcome back to Leo Roundtable at LeoRoundtable.com. And hey, great commentary on the last topic. And we're covering some stories that have some video components. So, wow. Yeah, this was a wild burglary in progress. Woman getting, you know, beat up by the bad guy that broke in. And he's a bloody mess in that blood trail all the way up to the upstairs bedroom where she was barricaded, and he kicks it in, the 911 call. Great coverage, guys. Two Bells giveaway that we're going to be doing, we'll make it a 24-hour giveaway. So even people on a radio or podcast audience, if you guys want to partake in that, all you have to do is just on the stream, type in the number 2 and the letter B and give us your email address, or just email me at chipdeblock@gmail.com to enter that contest. As long as you haven't won in the last 60 days, you get $20 off any purchase on our online store, which is at leoroundtable.com. Now, Jeff Winninger at jeffwinninger.com, you got a book coming out called On Thin Ice. And I'll tell you, can you give us some more information about that?
Yeah, you know, with the challenges that modern policing are facing, the book basically breaks everything down and talks about some actionable solutions on how to be successful moving forward in the 21st century. And it's quite a read. And I encourage everybody to get on the early purchase list. You can go to jeffwininger.com, or to make it even easier so you don't have to spell my last name, you can just go to onthinicebook.com.
Wow, I love it. Now, look, I got to ask you, is there any truth to the rumor that on the cover photo with the guy, because you got a hockey component here, the guy in the ice, that you initially were trying to use Travis Yates, but the ice could not support his frame, and you had to go for a smaller, lighter officer, less manly officer on the cover?
Yeah, that's when I decided to choose you to be on the cover.
Oh, the secret is out. Wow. You know, that just came back and bit me big time, didn't it? All right. And Travis, you know, you just smiling and laughing, you know, in the background while we're having this little thing. It just encourages Jeff to do stuff like that to me on live radio. So
truth is the truth. That's just
I don't feel like you have my back on this stuff.
Listen, here. I just went to the DMV to get my real ID. And
oh, your
I
real
was
ID.
Surprised they let me dictate my height and weight. So I'm much sexier today than I was yesterday.
Well, I love it. Now, speaking of books, The Courageous Police Leader, Travis, how can tell them about the book and how they get a hold of it? I know it's been out for a little while, but you're still touring the country talking about The Courageous Police Leader too.
Well, I mean, it's turned out to be a little bit timeless. I wrote the book in 2019. That's when it came out. And I was seeing what the environment was, and the book was kind of a warning shot. Hey, if we don't change some things and with recommendations, we may have like a 2020 type year. Now, I didn't put it that way. I didn't know that was going to happen. But then, unfortunately, 2020 happened. And really, when you read the book, you think it was written after 2020, but it wasn't. And so there's going to be some updates coming. I have a book coming out July 4th of this year. That one came out July 4th of 2019. I have one coming out July 4th of this year. And if all goes well, which typically it doesn't when you're trying to publish a book, as Jeff knows. But I'm looking forward to seeing Jeff's book. I'm excited about it. We need more like that. And so anybody out there that's even considering it, I would say contact me or Jeff, specifically Jeff, and just, it's not what you think it is. I mean, everybody that's worn the badge has a story to tell. We'd love to get those stories out.
I love that. You're a class act. Thank you, brother. And guys, are you ready?
Except for you, Chip. I mean, Chip, you probably have to learn how to read and write first. But everybody else we're talking about, we encourage it.
I'm thinking I should start off with maybe a children's book with no words, just pictures, maybe pop-up, maybe one or two pop-ups.
Yeah, it'd be popular.
That might work. That's what I'm thinking. So, yeah, I don't want to do anything to detract from what you guys are doing. I don't want to pull any, you know.
Yeah, right. Know. You don't want to outshine us and write the bestseller that makes us.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm not
all. We appreciate that.
You know, overachieving is just, you know, it's not, know, you know, yeah. it's not the glamour that everybody makes it out to be. So, all right, here we go. Well, let's go to our next one. Look, our next story, it's pretty sensational. There is also a video component. It's at rumble.com, or again, our favorite law enforcement video channel called This Is Butter. Man shot and killed by JSO, the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office, after attacking his girlfriend. And then it says charging a patrol car. I would say after attacking his girlfriend and then attacking the police car, right?
Shots fired. Suspect down.
So there's a lot going on in here. Of course, Jacksonville is like a metro, sheriffs and, you know, police agency combined there. Man shot and killed by Jacksonville sheriff's officer Sunday at a mobile home park. Okay, that's the first flag. We're at a mobile home park. Okay, so I'm sorry. And yeah, we're in Florida. So I know Jeff, I'll say it before Jeff even says it. That's a second flag, okay? Because we're talking about the wackadoos in Florida, and yeah, and we're in a mobile home park, all right? It's the city's west side after the man attacks the officer's vehicle and charges at them, according to the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office. Now, look, we had previously talked about we have more information that we previously talked about the story, and had actually had someone on the show where we actually kind of issue a little correction afterwards, because we had someone on the show that was kind of acting like no issue with hitting the guy with the car and charging him down, all this kind of stuff. It was either this one or it was one just like this one where that happened. But JSO Chief Alan Parker said that the guy identified as the bad guy, 39-year-old Michael Lee Wright, that he lived in a mobile home park with his girlfriend, who the sheriff's office did not identify. And then again, however, Chief Parker said that Wright's girlfriend decided not to stay with Wright Saturday night, but came back to their home on Sunday morning. And this is all typical stuff, right? I mean, look, as cops, we're always going back to the home with the female to get her belongings, or we're giving people divorces. They put your hand on my badge or whatever, or we're marrying people, right? So she, this is what the chief is saying. She came to, I guess, get a few things to see how things were. And as she pulled up, our suspect, who's Wright, he came out, attacked her, started throwing stuff at the vehicle and everything. So he continued on. So Wright's girlfriend then, she goes to a gas station. Remember, the cops aren't there yet. She goes to the gas station and nearby, she calls the JSO, the sheriff's office, asks them to give her escort back to the home so she can get some belongings. So now we have Officer Patrick Burke that shows up from Jacksonville Sheriff's Office. He's been with the agency 5 years. He meets up with Wright's girlfriend at the gas station, and now the officer and the girlfriend, they go back to the home so she can get some stuff out of the mobile home, right? And it's the Normandy Estates Mobile Home Park. I think they have some special rates going on right now. So that's when Wright's girlfriend said that she'd get some stuff. So as they arrive on the scene, they pull up. Suspect comes barreling out, literally attacks the officer's vehicle. It bangs on it. May or not have thrown something, according to the chief. And so this is what they're looking at. And he goes, and then the guy gets up on the hood. And I mean, on the center of the hood at one point, banging on the hood. Now, the officer, what it doesn't say, he accelerates his car at that point. But the bad guy had already gotten off. He misses the bad guy, and he hits a parked white pickup truck instead. They don't mention that. But then the guy goes to the driver's side of the officer's car, and he's like banging pan. Surveillance camera's on the passenger side, so you really don't have a bird's eye, but you can see the guy. You can hear him pounding, and he's definitely on the driver's side. So the cop steps on the gas in reverse, backs away. This bad guy chases the cop car down the freaking road. Cop puts it in the drive. Now he's just accelerating. Gets the bad guy up on the hood. Bad guy goes for a little bit of a ride. Cop slams on the brakes. Bad guy flies off the hood, lands into a big hedge of bushes and stuff. And that was pretty impressive. So the cop gets out of his car, and he's a good sized guy. He gets out and he's got his gun out, and he gets out on the driver's side. Bad guy gets up, and now he's he acts like he's got, in one video I saw, he acted like he was holding something up to his head. And later on in the report, I read that he actually, when he charged the cop initially, he grabbed a pair of scissors when he was attacking the cop car. But he actually has got something in his hand up to his head, and then he puts it down as he's charging the cop. And there's a notation here saying, "Go ahead and kill me," that he makes that exclamation as he charges the cop. And the cop fires shots at the guy and fires several shots, strikes him. The bad guy goes to the hospital, where he ends up dying. So we got about a minute and 20 seconds left for commentary. But just all the day's work in Tulsa is from what I understand. What do you think, Major?
Well, what we saw here is something that we often forget, right? I love how we use the vehicle, which is still deadly force, but we use the vehicle to attempt to stop this. Of course, it didn't work, but it's much less safe oftentimes to use your vehicle to deadly force and to get out in the open and engage a suspect. So I really like the use of the vehicle. I would love to have known the behind the scenes, like, because most people don't think of this, right, without some thoughts. We conducted a training session. I brought this to my chief, I don't know, about a decade ago, because I was over the EVOC program and to talk to him about this and convinced him. He wasn't really a big fan of it, but you would be surprised. I mean, we set up these cones to represent people, but mentally it was very difficult for the officers to hit these cones. They're used to getting out with isosceles stance and shooting a gun, but when you tell them run over that person, simulated person, it was actually difficult. So I would love to have known sort of the training behind the scenes that made him make that quick decision.
All right. Thank you, Doctor. Jeff, we'll give you a few minutes here before I get to the Wounded Blue, but commentary?
Yeah, I mean, really what I perceived that he was trying to do was create some distance so he could get out of the vehicle and then confront the individual on foot. And you know, people may be critical because the scissors were found underneath the police car. And apparently when I listened to the entire video, when they were briefing it in the video, the command staff officer said that there was a pair of sunglasses that he had in his hand. But that doesn't make it a bad shooting. Just because an officer perceives the sunglasses to be the scissors that he had previously seen in the suspect's hand does not make it a bad shooting. So, you know, it's very, great. Very important people understand that.
Great commentary, gentlemen. Great show. Thank you guys so much for being here, Dr. Travis Yates and Lieutenant Jeff Weninger. I want to mention the Wounded Blue at thewoundedblue.org. Check out that. They're a worthwhile agency for your support. Guys, a shout out to our sponsors, Gauls.com, ComplianceTechnologies.com, Gunman.com, BlueTheGold.com, MedicareLifesaver, recruiting in Two Bells. Thanks so much for your support, guys. Also, TampaFP.com, FormerLawman.com, LawOfficer.com. We'll look for you guys back tomorrow at 12 noon Eastern, LeoRoundtable.com.